Welcome to the Film for Fans podcast, the podcast from movie fans for movie fans. I am your host, Ryan Denelby. That is my co-host, Rob Dunham.
I'm inside where there's no wind.
Yeah. Winda. Not fun.
Yeah, it's really nice to not be in negative 20 degree wind chill.
Yeah. We tried to do a little bit of sledding this afternoon, which was, you know, not a good idea. No?
Sounds like tough sledding.
Really? That's how we're starting this off? Okay. All right. I see you.
I mean, that was a layup. Come on.
I got you. No worries. That is why I'm on my like third cup of Earl Grey today. So yeah, it's that kind of day.
You got to do sometimes.
Because yeah, yesterday I broke my rule and I drank long tea at like 1 p.m., which meant I had caffeine after 12, and that was not so great. But This is not a tea podcast, a caffeine podcast, a winter weather podcast.
Yeah, Rob is often drinking caffeine way after 12, and this is a problem. I may or may not have had caffeine with dinner tonight at 7 p.m. And I wonder why I don't sleep super well.
Like, I used to be able to do it. And then once I quit soda a while back, I just can't tolerate it anymore.
I think I need to make that leap and actually commit to it. I always try and never succeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
If anyone wants to send us some more health tips, please. we need to keep the podcast hosts healthy.
Yes.
So we can continue to do this for many, many, many years.
Yes. As all the fans are clamoring.
Yes.
That's right. All right. Well, aside from our health back and forth there, we have an excellent podcast for you. We're going to give you the box office update, some interesting results there. We're going to give you the four movies coming out in the box office this weekend, and we'll turn for our discussion. We will turn to the first of our annual installments of movies with anniversaries. We will be discussing movies turning 10 in 2026 tonight. That is 2016. 2016 was 10 years ago. Who knew?
Are you sure? Like you don't mean like 2006?
I thought I did. I apparently do not. Apparently. 2016, it's 10 years ago.
That's ridiculous.
That is, you know it. But we're going to talk about the best movies of 2016, and then we'll conclude with our watch list, movies we watched over the last week. All right, Rob, you ready to get started?
I am.
So we have box office update, and we have three new movies for last week that topped the top three spots in the box office. We have number one, Send Help, $19.1 million. We have the self-financed indie horror film Iron Lung did $17.8 million, which is an excellent return for that movie. Melania actually did extremely well for a documentary, $7.1 million domestically. Zootopia 2, 10th week in the box office, 10 weeks for Zootopia 2, did $5.9 million, actually gained in percentage this week. So more people saw Zootopia this week than last week, which is interesting. $409 million for Zootopia 2, which is kind of ironic. We're talking about 2016 movies, and Zootopia was in 2016, the original. So all things dovetail there. And number five, rounding out the top five, is Avatar Fire and Ash, did $5.6 million. That movie in 7 weeks has done $386 million. So some interesting things in the box office. Rob, what do you got?
First thing is obviously the success of Iron Lung. I would not expect that.
Yeah.
And honestly, like watching the trailers for this movie, I still really don't know what the movie's about or like how it actually plays out and is a full-length movie, and I might have to actually go see it at some point, because I was between this and Send Help, and I ended up going to see Send Help this week. The documentary is interesting because it On face value, it's a good amount of money for a documentary, but they also spent $45 million to make it. So,
They did. So it's return that kind of money.
yeah, I don't think it's going to make that money back. And one thing I saw that was interesting was it based on market tracking and metrics and stuff, there seemed to be evidence of vast amounts of tickets being bought and given away for this movie to help pump up the numbers, the sales numbers, which I'm sure there are other movies that have done that too, but
A
it's
lot
just interesting to me.
documentaries end up in that camp because they want people to go see it. They want the box office glory,
Yeah.
or so that is not uncommon. But yeah, that would make sense as well.
Yeah, I still can't wrap my head around why they had to spend $45 million and have Brett Ratner direct a documentary about her.
Apparently, some people are interested. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that one might drop pretty precipitously from week one to week two. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, that would not be a surprise either.
And I mean, Avatar is kind of just chugging along like the other ones did because it only dropped 11.8% from week to week. So, and Zootopia actually, did I see correctly? Zootopia actually gained,
It did.
even though it dropped 54 theaters from last week to this week.
So, yeah, more people saw Zootopia 2 this week than saw it last week. And that's 10 weeks into the box office.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's really like nothing else family oriented unless
No.
you want to argue that Avatar is.
No. Like if you got a 6-year-old, you're not taking him to Avatar.
I would argue Avatar is no one oriented, and yet somehow it's still making $886 million so far.
Hear you on that for sure.
One thing's for sure, Ryan, James Cameron's never going to be sponsoring this podcast.
No. No. No, I have missed out on the opportunities of the James Cameron sponsorship.
Yeah, he probably would have terminated us and sent us into the abyss by now.
Yeah, well, and since he owns the those subs, he's certainly got the ability to do that.
Yeah.
We are not getting a ride on those deep water subs with James Cameron.
Nope.
Sure. Well, that is the box office update. I don't have a ton to say about this other than it is cool when you see like someone, because Iron Lung was self-financed by the director. It's always cool when you see someone like hit it big like that. Because now you know for sure he's going to get other opportunities. He's going to get abilities to direct other things. And that's a really career-making opportunity in addition to the financial windfall that he gets from actually having this go well for him. So, all right. Opening this weekend, we have a whole nother slate of horror films, plus James or Kevin James. So we'll start with the Kevin James movie. This week in the box office, Solo Mio, rated PG, 1 hour, 40 minutes. Left heartbroken in Rome after a wedding disaster, a stranded groom finds his ruined honeymoon transformed by a determined local and a few meddling travelers, proving that sometimes heartbreak is only the beginning. Starring Kevin James. The next one we have is Dracula. Rated R, 2 hours and 9 minutes. When the 15th century prince denounces God after the loss of his wife, he inherits an eternal curse. He becomes Dracula. Condemned to wander the centuries, he defies fate and death, guided by a single hope to be reunited with his lost love. Now, the director here is interesting. It's Luc Besson, if you were unaware of that. Caleb Landry Jones and Christoph Waltz are also part of this. And Luc Besson is interesting. He has directed some cult classics, as it were. Most notably, The Fifth Element, Léon the Professional. He was a writer on that one. And so he's had some interesting films over the years. And some people like him, some people don't. Taken was another one on his roster. So that could be interesting. You have Strangers, The Strangers Chapter 3, rated R, 1 hour, 31 minutes. In the series' most brutal chapter, Maya collides with mass killers and finds the only way out of the nightmare is in. And finally, our last new entrance, Whistle, rated R, 1 hour, 37 minutes. A misfit group of unwitting high school students stumble upon a cursed object, an ancient Aztec death whistle. They discover that blowing the whistle and the terrifying sound it emits will summon their future deaths to hunt them down. So you have three more horror movies and Solo Mio. What do you make of the box office opening this weekend, Rob?
I will definitely be watching The Strangers Part 3 at some point. Not necessarily because I think it's going to be good, but because I'm invested. Because, like, I've already seen the other ones, so I kind of feel like I have to keep watching them. But I doubt they're going to get much better. The last one wasn't that good. But I want to see how it plays out, too, just for the story. Not super interested in any others, although I am finding it fascinating how we're having this in the last 5 years or so. There's been a real revival in classic monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Nosferatu, Frankenstein by Guillermo del Toro, got this Dracula now. I've got The Bride of Frankenstein coming out next month. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of momentum behind this kind of story. Maybe because they're just out of ideas.
But it's interesting because it's in the one genre that seems to be churning out regular new movies and some of the more original concepts, and that's the horror genre. So, yeah. I almost went to see Solo Mio just because it was the only thing in the box office I was really closely interested in, but I ended up not doing that yesterday. Maybe I'll get to it, but I will not be seeing the other ones, unfortunately. Not a horror guy. It's just the way it works. All right. Well, that is your box office update. And now we will move to our discussion. We are looking at movies that turn 10. This is an annual series we do of movies having big anniversaries, usually about every, you know, it's the every five-year increments, 10, 15, 20, 25. And this year, we begin with movies turning 10. So movies from 2016. Interesting year, 2016. I will give the Oscar results and the top grossing movies, and then we can give like our general impression. Well, actually, let's start with the general impression. Let's give our general impression of the movies from 2016, having gone back and reviewed them. Then I'll do the Oscar results and stuff like that.
My first general impression was that there were several like massive kids movies that came out in 2016 that made a lot of money and spawned sequels, like all of them, and were just like cultural moments for like the kid demographic.
Yeah,
so it was a good year for family movies
for sure.
Yeah, I would say one of my biggest takeaways, like even when I look at my list, is the diversity in types of movies that were on my list. There were a lot of different genres. There were a lot of different tones and types of films that were on my list. There was just a good variety that particular year. I think probably like the sci-fi genre is most prominent in my list. And there's a number of great sci-fi movies, but there is a ton of movies just that have different tones and different feels. And that I like that. I think the diversity of quality movies in 2016 was pretty high. All right. So the Oscar results from that year, the best picture went to Moonlight. The best director went to Damien Chazelle for La La Land. The best actor went to Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea. And best actress went to Emma Stone for La La Land. Top grossing movies domestically for that year was Rogue One did $532 million. Finding Dory did $486 million. Captain America Civil War, $408 million. Secret Life of Pets, $368 million. And The Jungle Book did $364 million. So there's your... there's your kid-friendly blockbusters that were dominant, and that definitely shows up in the box office rating. So now, do you have honorable mentions or do you just have your top 10?
I don't really have honorable mentions. Although I would say that there were a couple that I guess like Secret Life of Pets, Finding Dory, those were a couple like the kids movies that didn't quite make my list. There were other kids movies I liked better that year. But I also have like three of them grouped at the very bottom of my list, like my last three, because I almost can't distinguish between them. There was just a lot that came out that year, and it is interesting to me the movies that you mentioned that did end up making the most money and getting in the box office. Now, part of that is due to the fact that at least one of my picks for that bottom three came out very near the end of the year, so it didn't make as much. It didn't make most of its money in 2016. It made most of its money in 2017. So,
And that just
yeah.
happens sometimes with like the Christmas releases and stuff along
Yeah.
those lines. I'll just give you quickly, I'll give you my four honorable mentions. I have Captain America Civil War. I know it's like a quintessential movie that like showed the direction that Marvel was going for the latter half of that phase. It's just not my favorite one. So Captain America Civil War comes in as an honorable mention. Deadpool is also an honorable mention for me, mainly because of its like it had a massive cultural impact, and that character has a massive impact. Not a big fan of Deadpool in general. Inferno, the third one of the Dan Brown series that began with now I'm blanking out on the title of the
Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code, thank you. The third one in that series, and Allied, the Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard spy film from World War II, comes in as my last honorable mention. All right, let's get to the top 10 list. Let's do three in a row. So, Rob, give me your 10, 9, and 8 from 2016.
So my 10, 9, and 8 are the three kids movies I told you about: Moana, Sing, and Zootopia. So, I actually really like all three of these movies, hence why they're my top 10. But they're just, for me, I have seven movies that are, I would just rate higher than them just because of personal preference. There is actually a kids movie in that seven that I think is far above better than those three, just because of the artistry and everything involved in it. But it's hard to argue that, at least for me, with seeing how my kids reacting to them, those three movies, Zootopia, Sing, and Moana, were watched multiple times in my house. We went and saw them at the theater. We went and saw them at the drive-in theater. My kids sang along with them. So they do hold a special place for me, especially Moana, because my daughter sang that soundtrack endlessly when that came out, because she was just like, she was a 6-year-old. So it was like right at the perfect time for her, and she was very into it and like just learning how to sing and sing along with the soundtrack. And we went to the drive-in theater, and it was the second movie, and she fell asleep like halfway through it. It was great.
Nice.
But yeah, Sing and Zootopia also. I really do like the first Zootopia. I actually like both Zootopia movies quite a bit. But the first one is a classic. Like, just because I have it as number eight doesn't mean I don't love it. It's just not quite in my personal like favorite subgenre enough to rank higher than that for my personal list.
Excellent. All right, so number 10 for me is Passengers. We talked about this on a couple months ago on a podcast when I was defending a movie that gets panned sometimes, but I think is actually really good. And Passengers falls into that list. I actually really like the movie. I love the visuals. I love that kind of sci-fi element, storyline where you put people in a crazy, unusual scenario and see how they respond to it. In this case, a guy who is supposed to be hibernating for 90 years and wakes up significantly too early and is by himself. And how does he handle that? And so I really do enjoy the movie. I enjoy the direction. I enjoy the actors, and the especially the visuals. The scene where they are doing like their spacewalk is just really cool. And I like the tone and the tenor of the movie. So Passengers comes in at number 10. Doctor Strange comes in at number 9. I actually really liked the first Doctor Strange movie. After that, not so much, but Benedict Cumberbatch is great. Benedict Wong is also really good in this film. So I enjoyed this one. This was still while I was not tired of the Marvel movies, as it were. And getting introduced to the Doctor Strange character was fun. And I enjoyed this movie going backwards for that. Number 8 for me is 10 Cloverfield Lane. 10 Cloverfield Lane, I remember liking the original Cloverfield a lot, so I wasn't sure what to make of 10 Cloverfield Lane. And it turned out to be just a really solid film. It's kind of a locked room mystery, as it were. And you're constantly wondering the whole time, like, what this has to do. It kind of connects to Cloverfield, but what does 10 Cloverfield Lane have to do with it? And so just a really, it's an intense movie. It's kind of a sci-fi horror thriller type film, and it's really solidly done. It's an underrated film, and I think it doesn't quite get the respect it deserves on that.
Yeah, John Goodman is fantastic
Yeah.
in this movie. Very creepy.
For sure.
Very good performance.
All right, 765, Rob.
Number 7 for me is Hail Caesar, movie by the Coen brothers. I'm a big fan of the Coen brothers.
Yes.
Some people are not necessarily fans of the Coen brothers, but and I know even some people who are fans of the Coen brothers don't think this is a great Coen brothers movie. I think it's a great Coen brothers movie. I love Absolutely love Channing Tatum's over the top performance as the actor, and
Yeah.
just Alden Ehrenreich also is great in this movie. Like for me, it's a superbly acted movie with the main stars pretty much are people who are not quite like leading actors, but who have been good to very good in other things. And for me in particular, I already mentioned him, but I thought Channing Tatum was so good in this movie and does not get nearly the respect he deserves for his performance.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of like period piece stuff too. So I just love how they went back to like the sing dance number kind of movies and just made a story out of that. I like when a movie captures an era in a bottle like that.
Yeah, like 1920s, 30s Hollywood as
Yeah.
your era there. I think I like Hail Caesar. I thought it was a decent enough movie. It was, I'll lower down on my honorable mentions list. I think it got further reduced for me because I think Quentin Tarantino came along and did a better period piece looking back at old Hollywood. Now, not the same era, but with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I don't know if by proxy I end up downgrading Hail Caesar because I think Quentin Tarantino did a better, tribute to old Hollywood than the Coen brothers did in this case. But Hail Caesar is a fun movie if you
Yeah,
like.
to me they're slightly different in that I think Tarantino's takes itself a little more seriously, where I think as Hail
For sure.
Caesar is a lot more tongue in cheek
For
in
sure.
the approach.
Absolutely.
Number 6 and 5 for me are ones that you already mentioned on your honorable mention list. Captain America: Civil War is might be my favorite Marvel movie. It's definitely in my top three. The main reason being that I love the further story and background we get on the Winter Soldier, because I think Sebastian Stan is just an excellent performer, and I like to see that. And the tension, like, this is the Marvel movie that has like the most internal tension between the Avengers.
Yeah.
And it really brings out like a lot of the humanity and frustration and loss. And this is why, like, for me, phase one of the Marvel Universe is so well was so well executed, because there's actual emotion involved. And it wasn't just about comic books. Like, they did a good job of making movies. And that's why it's so high up on my list, because Captain America: Civil War, just a good movie,
Yeah.
regardless of the fact that it's a comic book movie. It's just a good movie, period. Great. I would say the same about Rogue One, actually, because I think Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie since the original Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that one's
And it
coming
was
up.
really cool to see just the background of that story of stealing the plans for the Death Star and everything that was involved in it, and how high the stakes were, and how cloak and dagger things had to be. And Rogue One is also, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but Rogue One kind of holds a little bit of a special place in my heart because it was the first Star Wars movie that I ever watched without watching a single piece of trailer for the movie before I saw the movie. So I didn't know anything about it before I went to see it.
Okay.
And that just made it an even better experience for me, and probably why it sticks in my mind so much.
And that was your number five?
Number five, yeah.
Okay. All right. Number seven for me is Hidden Figures. That's the story about the women who were one particular woman who was a calculator for a computer for the NASA space program, and some of the other women who are involved in that. It touches on some of the color barrier stuff, but it's like there's the color barrier stuff, but there's a lot of cool, like how they managed to get to the moon and all the different people they used, and telling kind of the story of some of the unsung heroes of the NASA space missions to the moon. And it's just a solid movie. It's well done, it's well acted. Taraji P. Henderson and Kevin Costner are some of your leads in this one. It's a solid story. It's a good film, and it's got the fun NASA element to it. So I thought Hidden Figures was a good movie. Number six for me was Silence, the Martin Scorsese film with Andrew Garfield in particular, about missionaries to Japan in the 1800s. And this is such a good movie. It's so well done. It's fantastic. But it's just a tough watch. It's not, it's longer, it's slower, and it's just intense. There's a level of intensity to it because you're dealing with persecution, you're dealing with people wrestling with faith, and it's so well done and so good, but it's just not a movie you can watch on a regular basis. So that's probably the only reason why it's lower on my list, but Martin Scorsese knocked it out of the park with this one. It didn't make a ton of money, not a lot of people saw it, but it is highly underrated film, Silence. And number five for me was The Accountant. I really like The Accountant. I think it's an excellent film that it's one that I come back to on a regular basis. There are some movies where they might not be the greatest cinematic movies, but I like watching them, and so I come back to them on a regular basis. And there are other movies like Silence that I think are exceptionally well done, but I don't come back to it. Whereas The Accountant is one I come back to on a regular basis. I like the character, I like the setup, I like the interplay between the characters on this one. And I think it's a fun story. I think it's heartfelt. Ben Affleck is great. Anna Kendrick is great in this one. I think the second movie suffers because it doesn't have an Anna Kendrick type. But the way it plays out, you've got the good balance of action and actual real connection and heartfelt moments as Ben and Anna Kendrick connect. J.K. Simmons is really good in this one. So The Accountant is just a solid movie. All right, 4-3-2.
Number four for me is Split, with James McAvoy. Split is very high on my list for a few reasons. One, they did a phenomenal job. Well, I like it's sad that they had to do it, but they did a phenomenal job of hiding who was actually behind this movie before it came out, because I watched the movie and didn't know that M. Night directed the movie until the movie was over. because they very intentionally hid that fact from you
Yeah,
in all the advertising for the movie.
he'd had not a great run of films up to that point.
And I was not doing movie podcasts at the time, so
Damn.
I wasn't necessarily researching all these things. In fact, I didn't even see this movie in the theater, but my brother told me, "You need to see this movie." He didn't tell me anything about it. And Unbreakable, as you know, is like one of my all-time favorite movies.
Absolutely.
So, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this yet, it's been 10 years, so this is your fault. You brought this on yourself. The end credit scene of Split reveals that it's in the same universe as Unbreakable. And
Yes.
when that happened, I about lost my mind because the movie instantly went from being great to being phenomenal
Yeah.
to me because I was so excited about where it was going to go
Yeah.
from there. Now, you can argue that it didn't quite have the payoff I was hoping for with the glass happening, but it was still, it was still worthwhile to explore that that world. And James McAvoy's performance in this movie is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like his ability, he plays like 12 different people, and he plays them each in a way that you can separate them. They're distinguishable. And the thing that's so impressive to me is some of that is like costuming, but a lot of it is really just his acting.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of makeup or stuff involved. It's he is being inhabited by these different characters and personas. And he's just so good at even just a slight expression. Like there, I'll never forget, there's one scene in this movie where he's talking as one character and then his expression changes and he becomes a different character, like in the moment of the scene. And it gave me chills, like how good it was.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why Split is my number four. Number three for me is my highest ranked kids movie of the year, Kubo and the Two Strings. This is a movie that a lot of people don't know about and a lot of people should watch. It is a Laika movie, same people did Coraline, and a couple others. This movie delves deep into Japanese culture, music culture. So any culture kind of movie that involves music, I'm a big fan of. And just the stop motion animation is just absolutely beautiful in this movie. It is chilling at times, how high the quality is. And I will never forget the one scene in the movie because my brothers and I are such dorks that the one line that the guy said was like something we would have said to each other, and it made me laugh so loud when I saw it in the theater. People were probably annoyed at me. But they go into this room, they're fighting this giant skeleton, and the one character points to the skeleton and he goes, "I've got a bone to pick with you." And he looks at the other character and says, "Get it? Because he's made out of bones." I was just like, that's so great.
Oh, man.
Number two for me, which is I'm almost certain not on Ryan's list at all, is La La Land because I love musicals. And this is, to me, this is still the best modern musical I've seen. And I love jazz too, and I love romantic storylines. So La La Land hits every single note, to be a little corny, about it. And I think Ryan Gosling is awesome in this movie. They're both awesome in this movie. Obviously, Emma Stone won an award for her performance, but I love everything about the movie and I love the musical numbers, and I really like musicals, and it's not always easy to translate a musical onto the screen. And I think they did a good job of that with this movie, all the way from the opening scene in traffic jam in the middle of Los Angeles where people are dancing on tops of cars, which makes no sense. But hey, movies aren't supposed to make sense. So La La Land is number two for me.
All right. Number four for me is Sully. This is another movie that I just loved. I loved it from the moment I saw it. I've come back to it a number of times. It's just such a solidly directed movie. Clint Eastwood directs, and Tom Hanks is the starring role along with Aaron Eckhart. And it's just a cool story. It's a cool story of a guy, an ordinary guy, put in a position where he had to do something extraordinary. And you wouldn't think that you'd be able to get a whole film out of something like this, but Clint Eastwood manages to do it. It's very similar, I think, to Runaway Train, or that's the right, is that the right title for that one? Unstoppable. Unstoppable is the word I'm looking, is the movie I'm
Oh, yeah.
looking for, where you wouldn't think there's a whole movie in there, but there is. And it's the same thing here with Sully. The performance from Tom Hanks is earnest, yet somehow understated. And even though you know you're seeing Tom Hanks, I think he does a better job than he does in some of his other roles of you believing, like, you're not just looking at Tom Hanks
Yeah.
as he's acting. Like, he actually seems like a different character, which is kind of cool. And I think one of the things that Clint Eastwood does a great job in the direction is he gives you pieces of the story. You get the plane crash, you get the landing, but you get parts of it. And he kind of ferrets out parts of it throughout the movie, finally culminating and you get the entire audio clip of them going through everything up until the moment where they land on the water. So it's a cool story. It's a heartfelt story. It's just well acted, well directed. It's kind of a feel-good movie that almost everybody can like and enjoy. So Sully, number four. Number three, I had Rogue One. I do think that Rogue One, outside of the original trilogy, Rogue One is by far the best Star Wars movie. And you could even, I might even argue it might be one better than one or two of the original canon. One of the things that makes this so good is because I think the freedom of not having to tie it in to existing characters, I think, gave them the ability to write something that was actually really good. And the cool part about this is there were actual stakes to the movie. Like, it didn't take a cheesy way out, it had actual stakes to it. They were able to give you real life and death consequences for what was happening. And just the whole thing is fantastic. And it was one of those where you're like, oh man, they're really going to put out more good movies, aren't they? And then they just didn't.
I will say, if you're into Star Wars and you have not engaged the TV shows on Disney Plus at all, Rogue One also gave us Cassian Andor, who
Yes.
is the star of by the without there's zero question the best Star Wars show
Yeah.
is Andor, and his character appears for the first time in this movie.
Yes. And his character is fantastic in Rogue One. So Rogue One comes in at number three for me. Number two, surprisingly for you, is La La Land.
Ah.
I actually really like this film. And I don't like any musicals, basically almost ever. And my justification is for this is one of these things. It's not a traditional musical. And that's why I know some people who love traditional musicals are only indifferent to La La Land, because it's not a traditional musical. The only, like, there's kind of two traditional musical numbers. One is the first one you mentioned, where they're in the traffic jam at the beginning of the film. And the other one is like when the girls are getting ready and they're going out on the streets and they're just kind of dancing around. Almost all the other stuff is directly tied into an element of the story. It's part of the ongoing. It always bugs me in musicals how they basically just stop the story to do this big musical and dance number and then they resume it. And it just drives me nuts. But it's so well integrated in La La Land that it actually makes sense. And like, because he's a musician, that flows naturally as part of the story. So that's one of the reasons why it doesn't bother me the way that other musicals bother me. But from a movie standpoint, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling obviously have tremendous chemistry. We've seen that in the many movies that they've been together. But more than that, Damien Chazelle does an incredible job of direction in this one. In particular, the use of color in the cinematography is fantastic. Like, the colors are bold and they're bright and they're vibrant. And everything from like the dance number at sunset overlooking Los Angeles to the colors in the nightclub scenes, like every bit of it, the color just stands out and just hits you in the face of just how awesome the color palette is in this film. It's so good and so powerful. And it's well directed, well acted. It's just a fantastic movie.
And
And
I will argue that although I have a different movie at number one, based on like how the Academy Awards movies, the movie that I have number one, I think you probably have as number one, was never gonna win Best Picture. So out of the movies that could have realistically won Best Picture, La La Land should have won Best Picture, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. In terms of ones that they were actually going to pick, yes. I mean, Moonlight's an utterly forgettable film that nobody even talks about anymore. So, there's that.
Yeah, and I mean, in the list on IMDb, I was looking at like the top 300 movies of 2016, and Moonlight isn't even on the list until number 20 on whoever's list this was, but it sounds about right to me. So,
All right, I think we know what number one is for both of us.
Arrival.
Now you got it.
Yeah. Denis Villeneuve, man. That like Arrival might be my favorite science fiction movie,
So good.
period. It's got to be in my top 10 movies of all time. It is the impact is taken slightly down after seeing it the first time. However, it changes after you see it the first time because you know right from the beginning what's going to happen, and that almost makes it more emotional. Like the very first scene of the movie when the song by Max Richter starts playing with the violins. Since I know it's going to happen, I've watched this movie like a lot of times, but since I know it's going to happen, like I cry, like, because I know what's going to happen. Just hearing the music does it to me. And this movie is a phenomenon of non-linear storytelling. And you think you know what's happening, and then everything changes. And the performances by Amy Adams and by Jeremy Renner are very heartfelt and very at times hard to watch, because understanding what they're going through, the decisions that they're having to make, and then for at least for me, since I've watched this since I've had kids, like that adds a whole nother level of complexity and nuance and feeling to it watching it. Thinking through what would you do as a parent. And the thing that makes Arrival such a fantastic movie is it's advertised. Like, I still remember when this movie came out. Like, it was advertised, I felt like, as this, ooh, an aliens coming to Earth movie. Like, we've seen this movie, like, how many times? So
Yeah,
I
you
was
have
like,
one
yeah, this will probably be
expectation.
pretty good. And then you go and watch it, and it is not that. Like, it's a movie about aliens coming to Earth, but it's literally nothing to do with aliens coming to Earth. It's about how we communicate as a species. It's about how we care for each other. It's about decisions that we make in the face of insurmountable odds, and it's about perseverance of the human spirit. Like, the movie is like I really have to sit down and make this list at some point. This might even be like a top five movie for me. This movie is so good. It is so far beyond any other movies that came out in 2016. It's probably one of, if not the best movies to come out in the 2010s. It is a masterpiece, and there are not many movies I can say that about.
This is the movie for me that cemented Denis Villeneuve as, for me, the second best director operating right now. He has a different style than Christopher Nolan, but the elements of visual storytelling here are just phenomenal. Because one of the things this movie does so well is it plays with your expectations of how movies are supposed to be and the way movies are supposed to go. But on top of that, he also plays with your expectations of genre, because you think you know what an alien invasion movie is supposed to look like, it's supposed to feel like, how the humans and the aliens are supposed to interact with each other. And he takes that, he gives you elements of that. But then he flips it on its head, and he does the same thing with the non-linear storytelling, because frankly, you don't know that it's non-linear storytelling. And that's the thing that gets you, is because he does in such a subtle, unique way There's hints of it there. You could figure it out if you're paying attention. There's hints of it there, but you don't know that the story is nonlinear until he gets you that reveal. So he plays with your expectations of storytelling. He plays with your expectations on genre, and does it in such an incredible way that you don't feel like it doesn't feel cheapened when you experience it. And instead, it's the exact opposite, is you feel the depth and the weight of it kind of all hits you at once. And it's just such a different film from what you're used to seeing in that genre, the sci-fi alien invasion genre. I think that's one of the reasons why it stands out so much.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Arrival, you need to see Arrival.
Oh, 100%. That needs to be the next thing on your list. I've even recommended that to someone recently as well. So definitely got to see Arrival. All right. Well, that's our top 10 list of 2016 movies turning 10 this year. That is so cool. And now we'll conclude with briefly with our watch list movies we watched over the last week. Rob, what'd you watch?
So I mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the episode that I watched Send Help, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Rachel McAdams. It's in interesting. It is very Sam Raimi. Like it's the there's fake blood everywhere. There's craziness. There's things that make you go, "What?" several times in the movie. I won't say that I loved the movie. I thought the movie was better than average, but I also don't think it was great. But Rachel McAdams did a great job in the movie. It plays off the idea of a woman who is downtrodden at her job and looked down on and just not given a real opportunity to succeed and advance. And she ends up going on this business trip because they need her to do the work because they can't do it without her. They still won't give her an opportunity. And then the plane crashes and it's just her and her boss stranded on this island. And she's like a lifelong survivor fanatic, so she knows how to do everything to survive in the wild. He knows nothing. And he's still a complete jerk to her for the first like few days around the island until he realizes, oh no, I'm gonna die if I don't let her help me. But it's got a lot of little twists and turns throughout, and it's a good turn your mind off kind of movie. I also saw The Guardian with Kevin Costner and Ashton Kutcher. And believe it or not, Ryan, I saw The Guardian for the first time. I've never seen that movie until this last week.
I did not see it in theaters. I saw it a few years later, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
It's a good movie. A really good there's been lots of movies done with like the father son archetypal relationship, like the guy takes the guy under his wing and then, tries to make him a better person. And Ashton Kutcher is really good at playing a jerk. And Kevin Costner is really good at playing that older guy. Kevin Costner playing older guys for 40 years, I think. The one scene in particular that I really liked is they go to try and find all the cadets and they can't find them because they're in an ice bath with Kevin Costner because he's trying to teach them about hypothermia and how to react because they're Navy, they're rescue divers for the Coast Guard. And the brass comes in, they're like on his case, like, how can you do this? Like, we had this plan for next week. Like, we were gonna take our time with this. We were gonna like slow build it. And he's like, well, they need to do this now because they need to know that what it's like, because the reality is you never know when it's gonna happen. And he's like, can you give me a few minutes? And then he goes back and gets back in the water with them. And to me, that was a very impactful scene because that's really what the movie is, that he's on their side and like willing to fight for them and with them, and ends up, sacrificing himself to prove that that's how far he's willing to go for his people that he cares for. Those at sea movies are like the visuals of them are just stunning to me, and I cannot imagine being a person in that position who has to put themselves in harm's way to save people. So it was a cool little like peek behind the curtain of that kind of world. I definitely recommend that movie. It's a good movie, The Guardian. And those are the two movies that I saw this week.
Two that I saw this week, I watched Ballerina, the fourth of the John Wick films, kind of the side shoot with Ana de Armas. And again, not quite as good as some of the John Wick films, but still really cool, very visually interesting. Ana de Armas is great. And you do get some nice cameos from Keanu Reeves as John Wick in this one. You always go for the John Wick universe for the color palette, the cinematography, and the over-the-top action. And you do get a lot of that in Ballerina. So I would recommend that if you are a fan of the John Wick franchise. And then, as is my annual tradition, I watch Groundhog Day. And I have discovered over the last week when talking to a number of younger people that not enough younger people have seen Groundhog Day. Not enough people have seen Groundhog Day. It is, I will beat this drum to death that it is one of the best character development films ever created. And I have lots and lots that I could continue saying on this, but the character development and the way it's laid out is so unbelievably accurate and unbelievably powerful. And there's so many messages that you can take from a movie that doesn't seem like it's as serious as it actually is, but it's so deep in ways that you're not expecting. It's one of the reasons why people keep coming back to it and why even critics have begrudgingly kind of come around and saying, okay, this really kind of is a little more of a masterpiece than we thought. And it's awesome. Plus, now what's fascinating is now that Margaret Qualley is older, she looks so much like Andie MacDowell, who is her mother, who plays the Bill Murray's love interest in this movie. They look a lot alike now, which is really interesting to see. Yeah, just a little side note on that front. But Groundhog Day, if you have not seen it, watch it. Watch it just for my sake.
And when you watch this podcast next year around this time, Ryan will be telling you to watch Groundhog Day again.
Yes,
So,
I will beat this drum forever. I don't know which drum is going to die first, my anti-Avatar drum or my pro Groundhog Day drum. I don't know which is going to stop first.
always better to invest your time in something that you're passionate about and not something that you don't like.
Yes, this is true. So
That's
probably
why this film, that's why this podcast is called what it's called.
that is for sure. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have on this episode of Film for Fans. Make sure you like, subscribe, tell your friends, visit filmforfans.com. And until next time, enjoy the movies.